All right, make sure you're in fellowship as we continue on here in Genesis 35. Well, we'll pick up now with verses 22b through 26, where we have the first recording of all of Jacob's sons. And we'll deal with that. Now there were 12 sons of Jacob, while consecutive, followed with the Kalim perfect third masculine plural verb Hayah, H-A-Y-A-H. They became literally the sons, your common plural construct noun, ben, Hebrew word for sons, ben, sons of Jacob, proper noun. 12 is your two cardinal adjectives here, masculine dual, Shanaim, first two, S-H-E-N-A-Y-I-N. It should be M, transliterated. Two, then followed your number 10. Asar, A-S-A-R. Then we're given the list according to their mothers. 23, first you have the sons of Leah, are now being repeated in the construct here. Leah, proper noun. And then in the Hebrew, you have first the word for firstborn, common masculine singular construct noun, Bekor, B-E-K-O-R. Firstborn of Jacob, proper noun, then our name Reuben. Then is your wow conjunction, then our next name Simeon. All these I'm just transliterated. We've been through the names, what they mean, etc. already. And wow conjunction Levi, proper noun, and Judah, wow conjunction between all the names here, Issachar and Zebulun. In verse 24, we have the sons of Rachel, same construct with the proper noun Rachel, Joseph, her firstborn, and Benjamin, wow conjunction. Verse 25, then you have the sons of Bilhah, Rachel's maid. Our noun for maid is the common feminine singular construct Shiphaka, S-H-I-P-H. E-C-H-A-A-H, otherwise the same construction, being in the construct, sons of Bilhah, proper noun, maid of Rachel. You have Dan and Naphtali, two boys she begat. Verse 26, then the sons of Bilhah, Leah's maid, again the same construction, using the Shiphaka, maid here, rather than concubine. Leah, and those two are Gad and Asher. Vowel conjunction in between the names. And then complete the verse. These are the sons of Jacob who were born to him in Padam Aram. You have first the adjective, both plural, Ella, E-L-L-E-H, these. Then you have your noun for sons, again, ben, b-e-n, common masculine plural construct. These are the sons of Jacob, proper noun, whose, your relative pronoun is share, a-s-h-e-r. To be born here in the passive perfect third masculine singular verb, yalad, y-a-l-a-d. To him is your preposition lamed with the third masculine singular suffix. And then in Padam Aram, be better translated by way of or by means of Padam Aram. You have the preposition bet used here as an instrumental, by means of. Then your proper noun, Padam Aram, also known as Haran, the area of Haran. All right. These are the 12 sons of Jacob, verse 22b. 23, the sons of Leah, being Reuben, Jacob's firstborn, then Simeon, Levi, and Judah, and Issachar, and Zebulun. Then verse 24, the sons of Rachel, Joseph, and Benjamin. 25, the sons of Bilhah, Rachel's maid, Dan and Naphtali. 26, and sons of Zilpah, Leah's maid, Gad and Asher. These are the sons of Jacob who were born to him by way of Padan Aram. Now says verses 22b through 26. 1. Moses provides now the first full listing of Jacob's sons. Now there are 12 sons of Jacob. As we saw, Benjamin was born quite a bit after the fact. The first 11 were born within a 7-year period called the Baby Wars. And now we're some 14 years down the line when Benjamin's born, 15 years. So, two, as we saw in verses 16 through 18, that detailed the birth of Jacob's last son, Benjamin, he being the youngest of the brood. Then we saw point 3, verse 22a, exposed the sin of Reuben, Jacob's firstborn, or Hebrew noun Bekor. So you have the mention of the youngest and the mention of the eldest of the brothers. They kind of give you a bracket, if you will, in regards to filling in the blanks. So 4, with the youngest and eldest, are there 10 brothers that collectively will produce the 12 tribes of Israel and the Levitical priesthood. How then will come the lineage for that to occur racially? So 5, it is through these that the confederation of the tribes will come to pass, fulfilling the blessing to Jacob of producing a nation, as verse 11 reemphasized. A nation and a company of nations will come from you. So essentially, these are the ones who will be handed the torch of the fulfillment of the Abrahamic covenant. So 6, however, maximum blessing by way of phase 2 remains dependent upon their obedience to God's word. As we saw in the blessing, the imperative of the verbs be fruitful and multiply emphasized phase 2 polyvolition, to remain obedient. So maximum blessing as it pertains to Israel as well as his progeny is conditional. That exact condition is outlined for us and detailed for us in the Mosaic Law. So, Jacob obviously has been blessed immensely. 12 sons, 12 kids, plus their sister Dinah, in that regard. My mom's side, they had 12 kids in their family, Kansas dirt farmers. They needed all the farming help they could get. So if they weren't farming, you know what they was doing, grandma and grandpa. So that's quite a brood. And that reflects, or that shows, God blessing Jacob for his obedience. So he is blessed immensely. How the rest of them now are to be blessed in their lives remains dependent upon their own obedience or disobedience to God's word. So 7, the importance of the listing contextually here is twofold. Why the list is inserted at this point in time? Is it just a chronological notation? it has more to go, as we've seen, maintaining the thread of symbolism and things of this nature that we've seen in this particular chapter. So the importance of the listing is twofold. It will be up to Jacob's sons to follow in the tradition of their father to express positive listing phase two to receive maximum blessing in their own lives. B, it prepares then the reader for the events surrounding the sons beginning chapter 37, which in the interlude will have the chronology of Esau, or the lineage. So A, the listing now in the present context is designed to impart, to portray an important lesson on volition. What comes out of this that underwrites its purpose is the very principle of volition. We've talked about and we've seen exemplified Jacob's volition, particularly his phase two positive volition of being obedient to God and obviously receiving maximum blessing. So volition now maintains or is now presented in terms of its reality as it pertains to those in history from Jacob forward. So 9, no matter youngest or older, eldest, innocence or guilt, particular sins or not, mother or father who sired them, who that is, most loved or least, Rachel, Leah scenario, their eternal destiny and blessing by God rests on their volition and determination in life. So 10, all other pluses or minuses, as one may count as two relationships. Every believer is on a level playing board before God to accomplish a successful phase two. Every believer is culpable for their own volition. The principle of volition is an important principle to have in your frame of reference doctrinally, to maintain a proper balance with regards to why people do what they do. Why people are the way that they are, and why people accept or reject God and His plan. Volition is one's will. God created us all free moral agents, free will. We are free, and He is a perfect gentleman in this regard. He does not coerce volition. It is neutral. It operates on its own. Like God controls all other aspects of history. Our actions and lives and things of this nature, the one thing He does not coerce is our freedom to choose to either obey Him, disobey Him, to believe, not to believe, etc. And obviously we have had the example of the patriarchs here, all three, showing us what phase two positive volition is all about in regards to their lives, and they chose to make the decisions they made in regards to being obedient or disobedient, and that same responsibility now lies on the shoulders of Jacob's progeny, especially as it will balloon into a full-fledged nation and Israel being blessed corporally, otherwise. And when it comes down to God's plan, God is not a partial God. He's impartial. He doesn't do what He does based on a person's looks, on their personality, their economic status, their race, etc. He does what He does based on how they respond to Him or do not respond to Him in regards to His directed will for their lives. So, no matter what environment one may come out of or be a part of, does not in and of itself determine what ultimately they will be before God. That is extremely important to understand. And another aspect that's important to understand is that God is not going to let Paul's volition fall through the cracks otherwise. That people that otherwise would believe not ever hear the gospel message. What kind of God is that? God foreknows who will believe what, whether they will be positive or negative. Therefore, He's able to perfectly anticipate what is necessary for those who will go on positive volition to provide them with the truth, one way or the other. As Jesus says, He can make these rocks talk if He needs to in regards to the triumphal entry and glorifying Him. If nobody else in this world would even bother to provide a witness, God caused creation to speak audibly, to make it clear. See, so this whole thing that they used to hammer over people's heads in regards to getting out and witnessing in the Sunday churches, and people are dying, going to hell because you're not witnessing, is not true. Is not supported by the Scriptures. It completely dismisses the doctrine of volition and God otherwise making provision for those who are positive. And every believer is culpable for their own volition. You may be the half-brother and sister of Jesus Himself. They remained in unbelief throughout His ministry. It's not until after the resurrection that they express positive volition. Yeah. And we saw in regards to the Advent, in regards to coming to the nation Israel, how the majority of the nation rejected Him. Even though they had God in the flesh perfectly, sinlessly, exercising and executing God's plan right before them. Was that enough to get them to believe? No. The sad state of affairs of the human race is most people will remain on negative volition or be on negative volition throughout their lives. The majority of people that live in the history of mankind will die and go to hell. Isn't that sad? The minority is that which goes on positive volition, whether phase one or even more so phase two. And every person will answer for their own actions. You can sit here today and you can blame your parents, you can blame your wife, your husband, your boss, your pastor, whoever you want. But one of these days, you're not going to have any of these individuals to lean upon as your excuse in regards to your choices in life. It will all come down to every choice you made individually before Jesus Christ. See? In regards to what you did with God's plan. So 11, blessing by God is dependent upon spiritual assets, not physical. It's just a tendency, the natural tendency of the STA to place the physical above spiritual realities as important and that which determines things. In social welfare work, social work, that is where the emphasis is at. The backgrounds of the children in families, etc., is going to ultimately determine whether or not, you know, happens in their life. Well, it may have a bearing in regards to the physical consequences around it, but spiritually, it does not. And neither does it ultimately physically. Otherwise, how do you answer people coming out of the ghettos and becoming powerfully rich and famous otherwise? Becoming academics, professors, doctors, lawyers, and the rest of the people want to join the gangs. What's that? Yeah. People are always looking for excuses to not be all that they can be. Sorry, that's the branch I came from. Before God, see. So blessing by God is dependent upon spiritual assets, not physical. How God interacts with us is based on our action towards Him, or lack of. 12, as mentioned earlier regarding Jacob's blessing, that national Israel will be blessed or cursed based on their volition in obedience or disobedience to God. To pick up on that, back when we dealt with the blessing in verses 10 through 12 there, now proves its worth as we address Jacob's 12 sons and their recording and how it impacts in regards to the nation Israel. So 13, that spirituality is the issue. Now, it's seen in the presentation of the list of Jacob's 12 sons. You say, well, how do you come about all this? Well, the list, how Moses presents it, is the first clue. It's the first clue. So, 14, the common denominator for all represented in the list, both mothers and sons, is a positive shepherd of culpability to the truth. In the list itself, they all have one thing in common. That's Jacob. A positive shepherd, in spite of all of his weaknesses and fallacies otherwise. One who would lead them in true worship, to give them the instructions when they fail, the right guidance, and all these things that are associated in regards to being a shepherd of sheep, spiritually. So they all had that one common denominator associated with them. God isn't, it pictures the fact that God isn't let people hang from any lack of the truth being provided in regards to life. It's out there. It always has been. And God will always provide for those who truly want it. So they're all culpable, just as the entirety of man is culpable to God. The very creation verses in Romans 1 point that out. The creation in and of itself is a witness that is all-encompassing to show that a supreme being exists in this universe. And it is Bible doctrine that gives us then the means and ways to have a relationship with Him. Even though all men at one point in time in God consciousness come to recognize, oh, there's got to be something out there. They're all held accountable because of that. And it's at that point in time in God consciousness that people ultimately determine what they're going to be in regards to their volitional choice in life towards God, positive or negative. Do you want a relationship with God or not? And then it will play out accordingly. So 15, now the first thing that grabs our attention here is that the listing of the 12 sons is based on their maternal relationship rather than chronological. Obviously, with Leah, it does start off chronological, but that's where it ends. The chronology, them being listening from the eldest to the youngest in their proper birth order, it ends there. And how it is presented is first Leah, then Rachel, verse 23 and verse 24, then B. Then we have Rachel's maid, Shifakah in the Hebrew. Then Bilhah, or Rachel's maid Bilhah. And then the last, Zilpah, Leah's maid, in verse 25 and 26. So the interpreter should ask, point 16, why does Moses format the list in this way? It seems kind of unusual. You might say, well, Rachel's dead. Well, so... So 17, the answer here, as we look at the underwriting of spiritual significance in this chapter, the order of these women displays volitional irony in their field of relationships. You have an admixture. They're all wives of Jacob. They all had kids by him. So 18, it contrasts the adjusted with the maladjusted here in a grammatical ABBA pairing format. A's bookmarking or bracketing the B's. You have Leah and her maid Zilpah. They are first and the last. Then in between in the B category, you have Rachel and her maid Bilhah. So that should catch your eye. There is a contrast here. So 19, Moses lists the unloved wife Leah first over Jacob's favorite Rachel to contrast God's view of the two women over their perception as seen initially through the eyes of Jacob. Again, I'm convinced that he got his act together. He recognized his vows. He recognized his energy of the flesh eventually over this. But this listing is as God would look at them in regards to their spiritual acuity. So 20, Jacob's favorite, Rachel, died sin unto death. We just dealt with it in verses 16 through 18. Leah is buried with honor in the patriarchal plot at Mamre, recorded for us in Genesis 49 through 31. So 21, so physical, marital love and affection, beauty or not, does not dictate volition. Rachel was the knockout, good-looking of the two. Leah had a little bit of a visual handicap. Her eyes are a little screwy. One, Jacob just poured himself over, bent over backwards, treated her like a princess. The other, he just disregarded her like she's just, you know, something on a shelf, basically. And this is the type of interaction, marital interaction that he had with them. This is the way they looked. How did it all end up? How did it all end? And obviously, recalling regards to Rachel's death and the whole reason why Jacob renamed it Benoni to Benjamin, it was reflection upon the fact that she had everything first in regards to their family that came from him in love, affection, doting over, and all these other things. And she still was not happy in life. You can be the trillionaire. You can be one of the Rockefellers. You can be whatever. These things do not ultimately determine one's happiness and what they ultimately are before God. See? So, your contrast between Rachel and Leah looks at the physical attraction or lack of, the physical appearance and beauty or lack of. Whether people like you or they don't, it doesn't make any difference. You still make your own choices as regards to your volitional determination in life. And you can still rise above it or fall grossly under it. See? Sometimes those things may even be severe handicaps for people. Intellectualism is a severe handicap for humanity when it comes to God's plan, because people that are intellectually, physically, mentally superior, you know, the geniuses of this world, the Einsteins of this world, they are often, most often, arrogant. The most arrogant. They think they're always right. See? So, you know, they're not going to sit there and listen to some Paul whose oratorical skills seem to lack and his sophistries, his speech was stripped of sophistries and things of this nature. Tell them what God's plan is all about. They'll figure it out for themselves. See, that's what we just got through dealing with in regards to the shepherd analogy, in regards to Jacob and his sheep. The dependency, the humility, the humbleness, and the dependency that sheep have in regards to the authority that God places in their life as an under-shepherd, etc. See? You got to submit to that. So, you know, all these things the world thinks so damn important, and that determines whether they are held great before God or not. The Bible doesn't see it that way. What determines it is one's own volition, one's own choice. So physical, marital, love, affection, beauty or not, does not dictate volition. It doesn't give one an advantage over the other. Then Bilha, Rachel's maid, is listed in the BB arrangement. The names in between. Pairing the two together in likeness. 23, Bilha's adulterous affair with Reuben, verse 22, simulates Rachel's maladjustment in life. So negative volition is like negative volition. Disobedience, rebellion against God is the same. 24, even after seeing God kill her mistress, sin unto death, she expresses disobedience to God. She just watched Rachel die, giving birth to Benjamin. And then she turns around and pulls this stunt. Well, it shows you the power of the SGA. And I'm not here to write the rest of these people off any stretch of the imagination for their own lives. But we are to concern ourselves in contrasting them and looking at their lives and seeing likenesses, similarities, and differences as it may especially refer to volition. So 25, this points out, so examples, good or bad, of others does not determine volition. You hear that, you blame people's actions on other people's actions. See, well, these gang people, they got to my son wrapped up in the gang. No, your son made his own choice. They may have offered his STA what his STA wanted, but he made his own choice. See. And obviously, this is a valid argument for today's society, because so much of society is saying it's all we are not responsible for what we are. I was born a homo. See. Well, whatever. Take it to your grave and see. Take it before God. Keep it to yourself. Well, you used to be able to say that. Not anymore. At least Rock Hudson had enough sense to keep his closeted. You know. Examples. Always trying to push. You know, that's the word of psychology. Place the blame on the environment. Place the blame on bad parenting. See. Well, you know, my parents were legalist Sundays, but I ended up on a doctrinal church. I had all that influence my whole life. Did it stop me getting on a doctrinal church? No. I'm here, so it proves whatever influence, and I'm not saying it's all bad. I still made my own choice. And that's what you got to recognize. People make their own choices. And examples around them does not determine, ultimately, the choice they make. Yeah, it may have influence temporarily, food for thought, things of this nature. We don't disregard that. But ultimately, negative volition is going to be negative, positive volition is going to be positive. So 26, now Zilpah, Leah's maid, closes out the paradigm here. So 27, there is no censor associated with Zilpah, suggesting she falls in her mistress' footsteps, spiritually pairing the two together, Leah. So here you have Rachel and Bilhah. They imitate one another in their volitional choice of being disobedient. And then Leah and Zilpah imitate one another. So 28, her pairing as a maid alongside Bilhah, as the two maids would be looked at together, teaches that positive volition will not be deterred even when associated with a maladjusted type. Well, they're hanging out with the wrong company. Well, we understand wrong company. And that the bad always drags down good. But it still will not ultimately determine their volition. But ultimately, they will get their act together spiritually or not. Again, they may have to go through the knothole backwards to get there because of their associations. So, 29, positive volition will be positive just as negative will be negative. You can't deter one or the other. You meet Jesus himself showing people, you're raising people from the dead in evidence and validation of your claim to being Messiah, and people still will stay on negative volition if they're negative. They still won't believe. Judas Iscariot, right there with him, 3 years in his ministry plus, and he died an unbeliever. But you can't, a herd of wild horses can't keep positive volition from the truth either. It's on the other end of the coin. That's the way volition works. Volition is the determination of people in life. It determines all that we do. What we want to be. Our freedom of choice. See, why is divine institution number one? Is the greatest thing that God really could bestow. Unfortunately, free will. Unfortunately, people choose to reject God and rebel against Him, slap Him in the face, so to speak, for creating Him as such, by being on negative volition. So, positive volition will be positive just as negative volition will be negative. 30, the volitional lesson is further illustrated in Jacob's sons with primary emphasis on Leah's and Rachel's children. So, the first section here, I'm showing the contrast between the wives. Now, we're moving on to the sons. So 31, our author reminds us initially that Reuben was Jacob's firstborn, Bechor. 32, however, as we've already discussed in analysis verse 22a, he loses the rights of primogeniture because of sin with Bilhah per Genesis 49:4. 33, by chronological order, that right should have been gone first to Simeon as second in line, and then Levi if forfeited by Simeon as he was the third oldest. In the order of their birth, given to us in Genesis 29, verses 33 and 34. 34, as it is, all three forfeit the rights which will go to the fourth in line, Judah. We know that from Genesis 49, 8 through 12. 35, this teaches that not only is phase 2 volition self-determining, but position, rank and file, or chronological superiority does not determine volition. What order you're born in regards to your family, what privileges that may be inherited by you just automatically. This doesn't make someone positive, it doesn't make someone negative. Hopefully you can see where what this is expressing in regards to people around us. It strips away, it cleans the blackboard, so to speak, in regards to the funny world that is constantly appealing to the physical out there in the world to get people saved. See? To knock on those doors. Interrupt their supper, whatever. That somehow, because Reuben was the firstborn, he has an advantage over the others before God. See, before God, it's not that way. We all on an equal playing field. Whether you're a slave, whether you're a free man. Whether you're male, whether you're female. Whether you're the boss or whether you're the underling. It doesn't make any difference. What makes a difference is whether you orient to God's plan or not under positive volition. And your rewards will be just as satisfying and just as spectacular no matter what rank and file you might be in time. If you do it right, see. You know, there's all this argument in regards to, you know, being under authority. Somehow one is going to be robbed. Not in God's economy. The wife that does it right and gets a prize, she'll have all the accoutrements that go with a prize that the male did. There's no sexual limitation in regards to ruling over nations with Jesus Christ for those who will hold to the end. See? God will put in the right people, the right place, the right time for all these things to happen. Right circumstances, right occurrences. And it happens all different kinds of ways for people to get on doctrine, to get polyvolition. In different ways. Sometimes catastrophic events must happen. And then it wakes people up or they start seeking. God knows how to draw out, if you will, polyvolition in regards to the truth. Without coercing it. So, again, point 35, this teaches that not only is phase 2 volition self-determining, but position, rank, and file, or chronological superiority does not determine volition. 36, it teaches further that phase 2 blessing is based on spiritual reality, not physical. This is all automatic rights of primogeniture. It's based on how one applies Bible doctrine before God or not. One's sin in life or lack of. So 37, the first four brothers along with Issachar and Zebulun as offspring of Leah teaches that volition is not genetically determined as it is with all the brothers. But just because you're a racial Jew does not give you an advantage. You know, the Jews think it did. It may still in many circles. That they had somehow an advantage over the Gentile in regards to God's plan, God's scheme. It's ludicrous. What kind of partial God is that? That's unfair. That's unjust. So 38, the nondescript picture of the Leah's last two shows that commonality physically between family does not in and of itself determine the spiritual reality. So again, 38, the nondescript picture of Leah's last two, Issachar and Zebulun, shows that commonality physically between family does not in and of itself determine the spiritual reality, as they will reap what they sow in regards to their own lives, in regards to their own choices in life. And just because, you know, most of your family is positive doesn't mean in and of itself you're going to be positive. That's what we're getting at here. Your family could be a bunch of Muslims. You can still be positive. God will know it. And one goes on a positive volition, they'll make the adjustment. See? May be married to an unbeliever and get on doctrine. And your whole family may be anti-doctrine, but it's not going to stop your positive volition or anybody else's positive volition. Or everybody can be on doctrine, it's not going to stop negative volition. It's just this whole fundy idea, you know, that you've got to employ a salesman technique and all these physical accoutrements in regards to getting people on doctrine or back on doctrine, things of this nature. It's fundy. That's all it is. It's fundy. It's not what the Bible shows. It's not what the Bible exemplifies. You have this whole brood of family, and they all go different directions. They do different things. They're going to kill their little their brother. That's what they initially plan to do. No. So 39, now Joseph highlights that reality when compared to his reversionist mother, Rachel. Huh? He learned. It's like the conquest generation. They learned from the Exodus. You know, they saw. They were positive. Joseph is positive. His mom was a spiritual wreck. But yet he's the one that gets the devil portion of blessing out of this whole thing. So, it's kind of a fun comparison, note-taking in regards to the children that we're dealing with. And all this revolves around and teaches the principle of volition. To recognize how and why Jacob came to be what he was, and the rest of them came to be what they were in that respect. All right, we're going to call it quits here. Pick this up Tuesday. Father, again, we thank you for the truth of your word. We ask God, the Holy Spirit, continue to light and see things. In Jesus' name, amen.